Part 2. In answering this question, the court does not write on a clean slate. It is well established that Congress's judgment regarding exercise of its power to enforce the 14th and 15th Amendments warrants substantial deference. The VRA addresses the combination of race, discrimination, and the right to vote, which is preservative of all rights. When confronting the most constitutionally invidious form of discrimination and the most fundamental right in our democratic system, Congress's power to act is at its height. The basis for this deference is firmly rooted in both constitutional text and precedent. The 15th Amendment, which targets precisely and only racial discrimination in voting rights, states that in this domain, Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. In choosing this language, the amendment's framers invoked Chief Justice Marshall's formulation of the scope of Congress's powers under the Necessary and Proper Clause. Let the end be legitimate, let it be within the scope of the Constitution, and all means which are appropriate, which are plainly adapted to that end, which are not prohibited, but consist with the letter and spirit of the Constitution, are constitutional. It cannot tenably be maintained that the VRA, an act of Congress adopted to shield the right to vote from racial discrimination, is inconsistent with the letter or spirit of the 15th Amendment, or any provision of the Constitution read in light of the Civil War amendments. Nowhere in today's opinion or in Northwest Austin is there a clear recognition of the transformative effect the 15th Amendment aimed to achieve. Notably, the Founders' first successful amendment told Congress that it could make no law over a certain domain. In contrast, the Civil War amendments used language that authorized transformative new federal statutes to uproot all vestiges of unfreedom and inequality, and provided sweeping enforcement powers to enact appropriate legislation targeting state abuses. See A. Amar, America's Constitution, a biography, quoting a Civil War era framer that the remedy for the violation of the 14th and 15th Amendments was expressly not left to the courts. The remedy was legislative. The stated purpose of the Civil War amendments was to arm Congress with the power and authority to protect all persons within the nation from violations of their rights by the states. In exercising that power, then, Congress may use all means which are appropriate, which are plainly adapted to the constitutional ends declared by these amendments. So, when Congress acts to enforce the right to vote free from racial discrimination, we ask not whether Congress has chosen the means most wise, but whether Congress has rationally selected means appropriate to a legitimate end. It is not for us to review the congressional resolution of the need for its chosen remedy. It is enough that we are able to perceive a basis upon which the Congress might resolve the conflict as it did. Until today, in considering the constitutionality of the VRA, the Court has accorded Congress the full measure of respect its judgments in this domain should garner. South Carolina v. Katzenbach supplies the standard of review. As against the reserved powers of the states, Congress may use any rational means to effectuate the constitutional prohibition of racial discrimination in voting. Faced with subsequent reauthorizations of the VRA, the Court has reaffirmed this standard. Today's court does not purport to alter settled precedent establishing that the dispositive question is whether Congress has employed rational means. For three reasons, legislation reauthorizing an existing statute is especially likely to satisfy the minimal requirements of the rational basis test. First, when reauthorization is at issue, Congress has already assembled a legislative record justifying the initial legislation. Congress is entitled to consider that pre-existing record as well as the record before it at the time of the vote on reauthorization. This is especially true where, as here, the Court has repeatedly affirmed the statute's constitutionality and Congress has adhered to the very model the Court has upheld. Second, the very fact that reauthorization is necessary arises because Congress has built a temporal limitation into the Act. It has pledged to review after a span of years, first 15, then 25, and in light of contemporary evidence, the continued need for the VRA. Third, a reviewing court should expect the record supporting reauthorization to be less stark than the record originally made. Demand for a record of violations equivalent to the one earlier made would expose Congress to a catch-22. If the statute was working, there would be less evidence of discrimination. So opponents might argue that Congress should not be allowed to renew the statute. In contrast, if the statute was not working, there would be plenty of evidence of discrimination, but scant reason to renew a failed regulatory regime. This is not to suggest that congressional power in this area is limitless. It is this court's responsibility to ensure that Congress has used appropriate means. The question meet for judicial review is whether the chosen means are adapted to carry out the objects the amendments have in view. The court's role then is not to substitute its judgment for that of Congress, but to determine whether the legislative record sufficed to show that Congress could rationally have determined that its chosen provisions were appropriate methods. In summary, the Constitution vests broad power in Congress to protect the right to vote, and in particular to combat racial discrimination in voting. This court has repeatedly reaffirmed Congress's prerogative to use any rational means in exercise of its power in this area. And both precedent and logic dictate that the rational means test should be easier to satisfy, and the burden on the statute's challenger should be higher, when what is at issue is the reauthorization of a remedy that the court has previously affirmed, and that Congress found, from contemporary evidence, to be working to advance the legislature's legitimate objective. Part 3. The 2006 reauthorization of the Voting Rights Act fully satisfies the standard stated in McCulloch. Congress may choose any means appropriate and plainly adapted to a legitimate constitutional end. As we shall see, it is implausible to suggest otherwise. Section A. I begin with the evidence on which Congress based its decision to continue the preclearance remedy. The surest way to evaluate whether that remedy remains in order is to see if preclearance is still effectively preventing discriminatory changes to voting laws. City of Rome identified information on the number and types of submissions made by covered jurisdictions and the number and nature of objections interposed by the Attorney General as a primary basis for upholding the 1975 reauthorization. On that score, the record before Congress was huge. In fact, Congress found there were more DOJ objections between 1982 and 2004, 626, than there were between 1965 and the 1982 reauthorization, 490. All told, between 1982 and 2006, DOJ objections blocked over 700 voting changes based on a determination that the changes were discriminatory. Congress found that the majority of DOJ objections included findings of discriminatory intent, and that the changes blocked by preclearance were calculated decisions to keep minority voters from fully participating in the political process. On top of that, over the same period, the DOJ and private plaintiffs succeeded in more than 100 actions to enforce the Section 5 preclearance requirements. In addition to blocking proposed voting changes through preclearance, DOJ may request more information from a jurisdiction proposing a change. In turn, the jurisdiction may modify or withdraw the proposed change. The number of such modifications or withdrawals provides an indication of how many non-discriminatory proposals are deterred without the need for formal objection. Congress received evidence that more than 800 proposed changes were altered or withdrawn since the last reauthorization in 1982. Congress also received empirical studies finding that DOJ's requests for more information had a significant effect on the degree to which covered jurisdictions complied with their obligation to protect minority voting rights. Congress also received evidence that litigation under Section 2 of the VRA was an inadequate substitute for preclearance in the covered jurisdictions. Litigation occurs only after the fact, when the illegal voting scheme has already been put in place and individuals have been elected pursuant to it, thereby gaining the advantages of incumbency. An illegal scheme might be in place for several election cycles before a Section 2 plaintiff can gather sufficient evidence to challenge it, and litigation places a heavy financial burden on minority voters. Congress also received evidence that preclearance lessened the litigation burden on covered jurisdictions themselves, because the preclearance process is far less costly than defending against a Section 2 claim, and clearance by DOJ substantially reduces the likelihood that a Section 2 claim will be mounted. The number of discriminatory changes blocked or deterred by the preclearance requirement suggests that the state of voting rights in the covered jurisdictions would have been significantly different absent this remedy. Surveying the type of changes stopped by the preclearance procedure conveys a sense of the extent to which Section 5 continues to protect minority voting rights. Set out below are characteristic examples of the changes blocked in the years leading up to the 2006 reauthorization. In 1995, Mississippi sought to reenact a dual voter registration system, which was initially enacted in 1892 to disenfranchise black voters, and for that reason was struck down by a federal court in 1987. Following the 2000 census, the city of Albany, Georgia, proposed a redistricting plan that DOJ found to be designed with the whole purpose to limit and retrogress the increased black voting strength in the city as a whole. In 2001, the mayor and all-white five-member Board of Aldermen of Kilmichael, Mississippi, abruptly canceled the town's election after an unprecedented number of African-American candidates announced they were running for office. DOJ required an election, and the town elected its first black mayor and three black aldermen. In 2006, this court found that Texas's attempt to redraw a congressional district to reduce the strength of Latino voters bore the mark of intentional discrimination that could give rise to an equal protection violation and ordered the district redrawn in compliance with the VRA. In response, Texas sought to undermine this court's order by curtailing early voting in the district, but was blocked by an action to enforce the Section 5 preclearance requirement. In 2003, after African Americans won a majority of the seats on the school board for the first time in history, Charleston County, South Carolina, proposed an at-large voting mechanism for the board. The proposal, made without consulting any of the African-American members of the school board, was found to be an exact replica of an earlier voting scheme that a federal court had determined violated the VRA. DOJ invoked Section 5 to block the proposal. In 1993, the city of Millen, Georgia, proposed to delay the election in a majority black district by 2 years, leaving that district without representation on the city council, while the neighboring majority white district would have 3 representatives. DOJ blocked the proposal. The county then sought to move a polling place from a predominantly black neighborhood in the city to an inaccessible location in a predominantly white neighborhood outside city limits. In 2004, Waller County, Texas, threatened to prosecute 2 black students after they announced their intention to run for office. The county then attempted to reduce the availability of early voting in that election at polling places near a historically black university. In 1990, Dallas County, Alabama, whose county seat is the city of Selma, sought to purge its voter rolls of many black voters. DOJ rejected the purge as discriminatory, noting that it would have disqualified many citizens from voting simply because they failed to pick up or return a voter update form when there was no valid requirement that they do so. These examples and scores more like them fill the pages of the legislative record. The evidence was indeed sufficient to support Congress's conclusion that racial discrimination in voting in covered jurisdictions remains serious and pervasive. Congress further received evidence indicating that formal requests of the kind set out above represented only the tip of the iceberg. There was what one commentator described as an avalanche of case studies of voting rights violations in the covered jurisdictions, ranging from outright intimidation and violence against minority voters to more subtle forms of voting rights deprivations. This evidence gave Congress ever more reason to conclude that the time had not yet come for relaxed vigilance against the scourge of race discrimination in voting. True, conditions in the South have impressively improved since passage of the Voting Rights Act. Congress noted this improvement and found that the VRA was the driving force behind it. But Congress also found that voting discrimination had evolved into subtler second-generation barriers, and that eliminating preclearance would risk loss of the gains that had been made. Concerns of this order, the court previously found, gave Congress adequate cause to reauthorize the VRA. Facing such evidence, then, the court expressly rejected the argument that disparities in voter turnout and number of elected officials were the only metrics capable of justifying reauthorization of the VRA.